Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast, where we talk to foresters about how they are using digital technologies in their day-to-day forestry work. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Forester. Today, I am joined with Andrea Fenekes. She's the past CEO of Remsoft, now strategic advisor and board member of Remsoft. Andrea, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. Lots of things have been going at warp speed of late that I'm sure we will chat about today. And I'm sure our audience, our listeners are dying to hear more. So for our listeners, just so you know, Andrea and I were talking before this, and Andrea was like, please don't ask me about all like the history of Remsoft and all this. And I'm like, but it's a Digital Forester podcast. The number one feedback from people is we get to hear people's journeys and stories. So much to Andrea's protest, we're going to drag her through memory lane for a period of time, but not too much. But maybe, Andrea, to kick us off, for those who don't know who Remsoft is, would you like to introduce the company and what it does?
Yeah, for sure. And, we've been around 32 years, so the history is way too long to get into. Many of you know us, many of you don't. Remsoft is a company that focuses on using optimization for strategic, tactical, and operational planning primarily in forestry. We're all about what's best. What's the best thing that you can do with your forest asset to maximize sustainability, maximize profit, whatever the benefits you're looking for from your forest. We've been doing that for, as I said, 32 years when we started. Many of you know that my husband, Hugo, and I co-founded the business. He's the smart side of the business. I do the business side of things. But 30-odd years ago, a couple of toddlers finishing up graduate school, trying to figure out what to do. And we'd really looked at a lot of different forestry related planning issues, and everybody was kind of trying to do the same thing. And we were doing some custom jobs, and we were trying to build computerized models. So this is like late 80s, early 90s. We're trying to build computerized models to represent a forest. And it was really Hugo's vision that said, you know what, let's just build a platform that lets every individual forest company figure out what's best for them. Now, at that time, we're talking about colored pencils and there was GIS was very early days, and optimization was known in supply chain, not in forestry. Anyway, from there, we figured out a way to build a business that it was global, still is. It's all over the world. It's been a really exciting and fun ride, and I'm looking forward to what's next.
And that's great to hear. And I always love founders who are so modest, saying, oh, you know, it's like this person has the brains. As a company that has been bootstrapped for 30 some years, clients globally in every parts of the world, office subsidiary in Brazil, footprint in APAC, you know, this is a major accomplishment. So I know us founders is always like, oh, you know, being modest, but you yourself have won many awards as well. So I just want to, you know, say congratulations on the achievements to date. It's an amazing story. So you're joining us from Halifax, Nova Scotia now, but Remsoft is based, headquartered in Fredericton. I was wondering, yep, was there an interesting story of how y'all ended up there or
Fredericton? Sure. I grew up in Montreal. Hugo grew up in Hamilton, Ontario. And we both, we decided to go down and do our master's degree at UNB. But our deal was 2 years and we're getting out. We really felt that Atlantic Canada wasn't big enough for us. We were big city people liking something. But it really grew on us. And I think for Remsoft, it was, has been, and will continue to be a fantastic place for a lot of our employees. There's a really great forestry school there. So that's a fantastic source of forest managers, forest planners, and we stay close with them. We work on the educational partner. We work with their profs. There's also, within about an hour and a half radius, there's a couple of computer science faculties. So we have access to those students. And then some really nice community colleges that put out great BAs who are fantastic product managers. So what we found was, in addition to a really great place for a good work-life balance. We could find hire some really talented people. And anybody who knows REMsoft, a lot of the people listening to this podcast know that we've got some hugely talented people that are worth spending time with.
For sure, for sure. And so thinking of your career to date, I guess that journey from building a company with a global brand and global customers, and the forestry landscape, is there, would you say there's been a monumental shift or a seismic shift from what you saw it back in the day in startup days to what it is now? And if so, are there one or two or three themes that you think would encapsulate that transition from the 80s to where we are now?
Absolutely. And there were it's so long that there were a couple of big shifts. I would say one of the first big shifts was in the 90s, and that was really spatial data, spatial analytics, being able to actually look at a picture of what your forest could look like today and what it would look like in the future to be able to visualize it. And when we started in that area and we talked to our clients, we literally had people say, "You don't understand. I already know there's no wood out there. I don't want to see the map that proves it." They were very much in an oldest first harvesting, and the foresters know their land. They get it, and they knew that this was not a sustainable level. So the ability to optimize and project into the future, along with the ability to look at it spatially, was really ground changing. It all enabled things like forest certification and all of that other stuff. So that was a really big shift. And then another big shift came with the crash in around 2008, and companies really going, "We don't have a good ability to plan around change, plan around uncertainty." And people had to start adopting technology that let them understand what happens when the world changes, which is super relevant again today. And then the last piece is the stuff that's been happening in the last, 5 to 8 years. People getting their data together, starting to use analytics to their advantage, and now starting to bring it all together, which is absolutely crucial. And it's going to be, I mean, one day we'll sit down and talk about our shared vision, but getting all of that connected and putting analytics on that so that at every point in the whole supply chain, that stuff's coming together and you're leveraging it with optimization, with machine learning, with AI, blockchain, whatever it is, all of that is possible. That's going to be game changing. We're just on the edge of that.
Right. And thinking of that journey, was there any technology for our digital foresters that maybe didn't come to fruition fully and maybe is being reinvented? Or is there something that really kind of sticks in your mind over the last few years of, gee whiz, if this thing only panned out, or is it just the natural progression or even evolution of technology where some things come and work and some things don't? But is there's one thing that you're like, gee whiz, I really wish this thing had taken off and it would have changed maybe the course of forestry and technology that's used in forestry?
A really good question, and I would say there are kind of two parts that I'd answer. Back in, well, when I was a graduate student, I did some, well, just a little bit of work, Hugo and I and a couple of others, on what was called neural networks, and now we would call that AI, but it was just simple technology where we would train the neural network on the history. We were looking at fire occurrence, and we're trying to figure out whether we could predict fire occurrence based on past history. Data sets were too small, the computing power was too limited. And based on the simple data set, what we learned was a really experienced forester with 25, 30 years of experience really could predict just as well as the system. But the difference was, and this is what really needed to happen, it was all about the data, and people having data, but also being able to use data. And that hasn't really become fully embedded into the fabric of everything that everybody does for the last few years. And now we're kind of at the stage where a lot of people are using data, but it's still in a spreadsheet. It's still a little kludgy. So there's still a bunch of ways to go, but the adoption time is really getting much shorter. And I'm looking forward to seeing that all unfold.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So thinking of REMSoft technology with optimization, I'm going to assume that it's heavily data dependent. So I'm going to assume that has that been a challenge, I guess, for REMSoft projects where data is a constraint, or is it something else like the people or organizational readiness, the whole change management side? What would you say? Would it really be data, or is it or maybe it's a multitude of things?
I would say it's a multitude of things. Data, yes, but maybe not as much data as you might need for more operational, very refined, detailed precision forestry stuff. But you do need to be able to tap into data from disparate places, right? So you need to get your inventory, you need some financial, you need some costs, you need data from different places. So it's not so much the data as where it's got to come from and how it's got to come together. So that's one. The second is that optimization is not—it's not easy, and we've really spent a lot of time about whether you can layer an interface on it and make it kind of push button. But the whole point of optimization is to explore different scenarios. And so, if you automate the process by which you want to create your different scenarios, you kind of eliminate it. So there is some skill issue. And change management is another one, less for optimization, but we see it more and more like for RimSoft operations and more into field work where companies have built up over 10, 20, 30 years really good processes that work well for their company. They're finely tuned for their company. And then people like us come along and go, oh, well, here's how you can use this great technology, and their answer is, but it doesn't fit with our process. And so sometimes it makes sense to adapt the technology to the process, but a lot of times it's really important to sit down and say, maybe the process is dated and won't scale to the new technologies, the new opportunities. And so change management, to me is massive, and I think anybody who's implementing new technology should be saying, how do we go through change management and what has to change? Is it the technology or the process? And there's not an obvious answer. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other, but boy, oh boy, that question better get asked.
For sure, for sure. Now, I know a lot of people talk or say they do optimization, and I know I was just at a workshop where somebody was talking about it, and I asked the question, "Are you really doing optimization?" And the answer was like, "Well, no, not really in the truest sense." So I was wondering if you can maybe for our digital forester listeners explain what optimization means to you, and then in the context of what REMSoft does with Woodstock, and you had just mentioned REMSoft operations. What does that mean, optimization, in the context of those two products?
So when we say optimization and REMSoft does optimization, the kind of Coles Notes version is it's a mathematical calculation of every single possible permutation and combination that could ever be considered out into the future for as long as you want. And every single one of those is mathematically correct and can be proven down to the data point. And so if you want to explore different scenarios into the future, you're going to know that you have the mathematically optimal result. Now, that's in practical terms, you almost never can follow and do the mathematically optimal result, but it gives you a place to start. What's best and what's possible? So when you talk about what REMSoft does and Woodstock, which everybody would know that product if they know about REMSoft, really, it's about describing your forest. I would call it a digital twin of your forest. So, what do you have? What are your assets? What's your inventory, species, volume, all of those kinds of things? What do you have? What do you do? What are all the possible actions that you could ever take? And the actions could be things from, well, the tree's just going to grow and we need growth and yield data at this rate. But it could be that we're going to harvest it, we're going to produce, 2x4s, or we're going to sequester carbon. What are all of the possible we could do pre-commercial thinning fertilizer on in every single possible combination you could consider, whether or not you feel that they are a good idea, you put them in the model. And then you say, well, what happens for each of those actions? What happens? Well, if I harvest a tree, I've changed the block itself. I've changed the composition of the block, and that would be described, but also what product possibilities do I have from that? So what happens when you do the action? So what do I have? What could I do? What happens when I do that? And then what do you want? So what are all of the possible outcomes? Revenue, carbon sequestered, all of that kind of stuff. You provide all, that's your digital twin of the forest. You provide that to the optimization engine. It does all the calculations and says, here are the different scenarios that would work for the constraints and limitations that you may have placed on it. I think I went a little too complex on that, didn't I?
No, that's great. That's great, because what I heard was it's not like you push a couple buttons and then off it goes. This is a complex model that's being built with multiple inputs and outputs and constraints, and I assume it can take some time to run given the complexity of the model.
It depends on the calculations and the complexity. And there are certainly places where optimization can be used as a push button. For instance, I think there's real potential in things like crew scheduling or more short-term planning that we haven't looked at yet, but we need to do a little research into where it's a very small subset of a problem and you could push button optimize, just, here's the best solution. You don't need all of the analysis, but most of the strategic and tactical level planning that our customers do, those should be explored properly so that they can really believe and understand that they've made the right choices for the long term of their business.
Right. And I'm sensing then with REMSoft operations, was that something that came about as that natural flow from the strategic tactical down to the operations level? What does this new SaaS tool do?
Absolutely. So yeah, and we are on this journey where strategic and then tactical, then operational, then REMSoft operations. And the reason that Lim joined REMSoft was the same reason we can add that piece as well, because I believe that all of that belongs together. The Cole's notes on REMSoft operations is you would take an optimized plan. You would start with your this is what's the best thing to do for the coming season. And operations is a very much so it no longer uses optimization. It takes the plan, lays it out across the land, who are the crews, the equipment, the costs, the revenues, all of that kind of stuff. And then the forester team can really allocate the plan across the months and the weeks and respond to change. And their AI components in REMSoft operations, I call them a co-pilot, but it pops up and says, hey, you scheduled to have that crew move from block 7 to block 9 next week. That block is, you guys are behind on production. You may want to ch change the schedule by this amount. Do you want me to accept this change? So we're starting to build AI underneath to help people improve the way that they do the allocation.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. So I suspect there might be some listeners right now thinking two things. One, probably, this REMSoft operation thing sounds really interesting. Or secondly, they're hitting the rewind button going, wait, what did Andrea just say? REMSoft acquiring Lim Geomatics. So maybe we should pause and talk about that. So for our astute listeners, you would have heard Andrea being introduced as the past CEO of REMSoft, now taking on a strategic advisor role and a board member role on the board of directors. But why don't we go there, I guess. This is not something that happened overnight. Walk us through the thinking, because for those who don't know Andrea, she's a strategist thinking on very long time span. So nothing happens accidentally with Andrea. It's all very planned out. So bring us back maybe to that point of when you started thinking about M&A and what you were thinking there, the origin, I guess.
Absolutely. And, for those of you who don't know, Kevin and I have been talking about the future. Where is forestry going? What needs to be happening? Easy 3 years, probably longer. So this was and it was an obvious for us. But really, about 3 or 4 years ago, we started to look at, okay, what's next? Does REMSoft just build some more product? Or what should we be doing? And where should we be taking what we have and helping our customers? And our customers have always been like our number one focus is on who are they and where is the value that they get and how do we provide that? We've never been about sort of bleeding edge technology, but we do feel it's important to be leading edge. It's important to hear and understand what customers are thinking about so we can be ready for them with the technology they need just before they need it. And we started to look, and we really did a lot of research into different sectors, different markets, into data and technologies. And it was absolutely clear to us that the entire forestry supply chain needed to be connected and intelligent. It's happening in other sectors. There are bits and pieces of technologies in the forestry sector that are connected kind of loosely. Far too many vendors, nothing against the vendors, they're fantastic companies, but our clients then have to deal with too many discrete vendors when they want to put a whole system together. And it became clear to us that there was a need for a full forestry intelligence platform. I mean, companies sit on just vast, vast untapped data, and they can't harness it for better business performance. And there are just huge gains to be getting smarter at every point in the value chain, you know, productivity, sustainability, revenue, all of that. And so we thought about what that meant. And in the past, things moved more slowly. And if we had been like I was starting out many years ago, we would have built that ourselves. But it's going much too quickly. I believe that our clients need this. You know, the forestry sector needs this in a few years, not in 15 years. And so it was clear to us that we needed to go out and search for technology partners and not just partner with them, but really bring them into the Remsoft tent and build out the entire value chain so that it's fully connected, but also so that all of the data from all of those different places comes together centrally and can be used for net new insights, applications, and understanding. So that's, and Kevin and I have talked about this vision. You know, feel free to chat about it, Kevin. We've talked about it for a few years. He came down to Fredericton from Ottawa. We mapped a bunch of things out on a whiteboard. This has been something we've been talking about for a while. And so when it was time to pull the trigger, LIM Geomatics was obviously the first company that we called, and we are delighted to have them in the Remsoft tent, and we're delighted to have Kevin taking up the role as CEO to lead forward in our next few steps.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and really appreciate the opportunity. Looking forward to it. But today, I am just Kevin, the Digital Forester podcast host. So I'll keep wearing that hat. Now, I know with that effort, I guess a lot of research and clearly a lot of thought. And I don't think our listeners probably will appreciate how much thought you put into this. There was someone, private equity that acquired a majority position in Remsoft. Maybe for our listeners, tell us. I'd be curious to know the emotions of going through that process, finding the right
Sure.
partner, and what can you share on that front and your thinking as you went through that journey as a founder and potentially passing your baby along to somebody else.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, particularly because I think as foresters, often terms like private equity are ones like, oh, don't want to go there. But we really sat down and said, what needs to happen and who can do it best? And we'd seen a lot of examples in our research of sort of situations where somebody went and bought a whole bunch of companies, then they just sat there, and it was the vision that we had was never really completed. The systems were not properly connected. They weren't really focusing on AI and intelligence and optimization, which are so critical. All of that stuff, and we knew that we needed capital to do that. So we did go out and look at a lot of different options. And I don't know how many different companies I talked to, but it could be close to 100. A lot of them I dismissed right out of hand. But we did land with Banneker Partners, who had a vision that they shared. I kind of walked them through what we were looking to do, and they got it and they understood it. And they were committed to providing us with capital to do the M&A, but also invest in development. So we're doing hiring so we can build out the platform ourselves. and also bringing their expertise on scaling, because we'll need to scale a little bit. So we chose Banneker as our partner, and that deal closed just before Christmas, and then we waited to do the announcement until Lim was also part of the company. But it's a tough decision to give your baby up to even to guys like Kevin. I mean, when you do the same thing for a long time. But it was so clear to all of us in the company that this direction is the right direction for our customers and for the future, that it was obvious to us. And I do have to say that since we started this and we've been working with Banneker, it's been a good experience. We're feeling good about it.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear. And so maybe thinking about that on the decision to kind of go faster, I guess maybe the best way of putting it. I'm curious to know your thoughts on, you touched on, a lot of companies in the forestry technology space, and that's just not in Canada or North America. That's globally.
Totally.
So I'm curious first off to know, why do you think that is? And then based on that, how do you think that's affected innovation in the forestry space? Do you think it wouldn't have mattered if there were larger entities kind of pushing its way through? Or do you think maybe the level of innovation was appropriate for the market itself? But why do you think it's been so fragmented? And then the second part to plant the seed is, why do you think no one else has done this already? Or maybe they've tried and haven't been successful and we never heard about it. So maybe a two-part question. Why are we so fragmented in that forestry technology space, and why haven't others tried to do this?
Few parts of that in all of this work that I did, it's very typical in a sector. You get lots of startups, lots of small technologies, and bit by bit they come together into pieces that make sense, or they roll into a larger company. And so that's a natural progression. And one of the things in forestry is it's a relatively small market, so the giant players really don't come in. I kind of think that's a good thing for forestry in general, because it keeps the space. The technology companies that we see are largely companies that come out of the forestry space, so they're not outsiders coming with different domain expertise and trying to impose it on forestry. We all know forestry is pretty unique, so. I think it's been good for innovation all the way along. There's just, some of the stuff that you brought to the table. And as we look at a lot of the companies globally, they're all bringing something cool to the table based on their own experience of what's the right thing to do, in their world. And when those piece parts can come together, we can make it a whole lot easier for people to do it. And so, what was the second part of your question? Sorry.
I was thinking in the first part, why hasn't the first part we addressed? Second part was, why do you think someone hasn't already done this? Is it because it's harder, or maybe they don't understand the space? Because we always say forestry is unique, and then everyone else who's not in forestry says, yeah, Andrea, that's what every sector says. But you and I both know forestry is very unique. So why do you think no one's tried maybe, or has been successful in doing what you're trying to do?
I would say that a lot of it is that forestry is unique. As I talk to investors, a lot of them, their answer was, "We just don't understand forestry." And I think that's very true. And I think that's something that you just, seeing a company who says, "Oh, we've figured out how to do strategic planning, now we'll go do it in forestry." It's a whole different game. That's not the only piece, but it's certainly a very large piece. When you're talking about a biological asset and you're talking about production and manufacturing and margin and carbon and habitat and riparian rights, and all of that stuff has to come together along with community engagement and indigenous priorities and different practices. There's just a lot there, and it is very complex, and it's hard for people to get their head around. So not a lot of players are in a good position to put it all together.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So thinking of keeping with the Digital Forester podcast, and this is the first one we're launching for 2025, love to get your thoughts on some technology. And so while you say, you goes, the tech side of things, I know well enough that you're always scanning the technological landscape and figuring out how these pieces, the puzzles fit together. What are the technologies that you're looking at regularly now? And some of them, I suspect, once you say them, people will be like, oh yeah, that's obvious. And based on those that you're following now and today readily available, is there one that excites you more than others?
I would say I'm looking at all of them, and they are different uses. I was talking to I'm really right now I'm focused a lot on AI and supply chain. So where are the best places? And AI is a broad machine learning, just using a lot of data. But where are the best places to apply things like optimization and AI and even blockchain? Where do they belong and how shall they be leveraged to make sure that we're putting together the right platform? And it's interesting when you talk to, fairly senior people in a lot of companies, they just group all of that together. That's all the same thing. And I think it's important for us to help our customers and but also for any executive, not to become a tech nerd, but to do enough work. There's such great tools, Perplexity, ChatGPT, where you can ask it some pretty complex questions and say, help me understand the difference between AI and blockchain. If I'm talking about, a forestry supply chain, you can get a pretty good handle on things that you didn't used to be able to do so easily. Understanding what those technologies are and how they might be able to help will really help executives lead their technology people and make sure they're making the right decisions in the company. So I'm doing a lot of work in that area. I talked to someone who's writing a chapter on AI in the supply chain, and she said to me yesterday, she said, the question is AI ready for supply chain or is supply chain ready for AI? And where we landed in our discussion was it's probably more about is supply chain ready for AI? And that kind of takes us all the way back to the change management stuff. Are the people and the processes in place to adopt the technology? So to me, it's less about the cool technology and it's more about helping to make sure that companies are ready to use and take advantage of the technology.
And when you mentioned that, I was chuckling inside because getting forestry companies or foresters in general or converting them to digital foresters, some of them are still using really old school technology, and yet you're thinking about AI and supply chain. What do you think we need to do as an industry, sector, group, community to close the gap, maybe, so that when this is presented to that Joe or Jane Forrester, that it's like, yeah, I get it. Or do you think we have to do nothing and the workforce, the demographics, is going to take care of it, in the sense of young people coming now, they have a different toolkit, they just expect different things. Chat GPT just comes along for the ride. When I look at my kids, they're doing this typing with their fingers, and I'm like, I took a course to learn how to type. And they look at me and say, like, why would I do that? I can dictate if I really wanted to, Dad. And I'm like, oh, touche. That's true. But thinking of that, what do you think? Has anything changed, I guess, in terms of the forestry community and the education, outreach, knowledge transfer that we need to do to enable this future? Or is it business as usual and we just hope, pray, looking forward?
No, I think there's a few pieces there. Some of it is the demographics. Most of the people in forestry, less and less are, they're more my age than they are the up and comers. But that window, I can't remember the statistic, but a huge number, 25, 30% are going to retire in the next 5-ish years. Well, they're taking with them, if you go back to my story in the beginning from the neural networks, they're taking with them the gut and the experience. They just know and feel this forest, and that's going with them. The people that are coming in haven't had the time to build that, and they know how to use the tools. And so we better give them tools that they can use that can help replace the judgment and the experience and the wisdom of the people who are moving out of the field. So in our jobs, it's really about continuing to work as hard as we can to help people understand not so much what is the technology. I don't really care what's under the hood of my car. Some people do. I just want to know how to drive it. And I think we need to make sure that it's as intuitive as possible, it's as usable as possible, but also that there is some understanding of how insights and decisions are getting made through the technology. And I think something that we can do, and all of us should do, is really get great at questioning and understanding answers that data are giving us. I don't know if you've ever asked ChatGPT or Perplexity a question. It serves you up a ridiculous answer, and you're like, where did that come from? We should not just take data at face value. We need to understand where it came from. And we, as technology providers, have to help people dig into that and get comfortable with what we're providing them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know currently there's a saying, at least today, given where AI is, it's not that AI is going to take your job. It's the person who knows how to use AI that's going to take your job. But maybe in the
Absolutely.
future that'll change, right? So if I was to stretch you far into the future, what does the world of forestry look like? And what does the world of forestry technology look like? Let's say maybe 10 years, and then let's say maybe 50 years to kind of pull your thinking that far out. Have you thought about what it could look like, what it could be? Is it Elon Musk humanoids, chopping wood? They've got a chainsaw built into their arm. We don't even need heavy equipment. They'll just go ahead and one arm a log and carry it to roadside. What does that crazy future look like to you when you think about it?
I think automation is important and real, and I think we will see a lot of automation. Automation in putting to everything from building the plan and putting together the plan through allocating activity on the ground, that will all be automated. The harvesters may or may not have people in them. The harvesting heads will constantly be sending data back that's constantly being processed, replanned, every kind of adjustment. And as we step all the way through the supply chain, right now, I don't know, what is it, 40% of delivered wood cost is in transportation and logistics. So routing, every truck will be full. They won't be, the backhaul will be efficient. Most efficient direction. No tree will be cut at random, will be the end goal. And then right into the mill, maxing productivity. All of that's going to be automated through decision making. But my hope is that, and I believe it will happen, there's still, because we are in an uncertain world, and particularly with a biological asset, that we still need really smart eyeballs on what all of this technology is doing for us. And I think that's the onus is on us to provide opportunities for people to analyze and question and be a little bit cynical and skeptical. And well, what if that doesn't happen? And what's an alternative choice that I could make? And that to me would be a great outcome.
Very cool, very cool. So I might maybe take you down a different path because I'm actually curious as an entrepreneur and thinking, just as we talked about the forestry technology landscape being very fragmented, and even on the Digital Forester podcast, we've had a lot of people, startups doing drones, startups doing, all sorts of different things. And so maybe in your entrepreneurial journey, your successful exit. I don't think I was talking to a friend out in Nova Scotia messaging, and the comment was, for folks who don't live and breathe this entrepreneur thing, they may not fully appreciate what it means to exit and how hard of a journey it can be to get to that point. So thinking of your journey and maybe the younger listeners of the Digital Forester podcast, as an entrepreneur to a younger entrepreneur, are there any tidbits of pro advice that you would actually give to them looking back on your storied career and successful career at Remsoft?
That's a good question, and I haven't thought about it before, but I would say, be if you're just in the business to make a bunch of money, like, go home. I don't want to talk to you. You got to have a passion for something. You got to figure out what value that provides to your customers, because if you're not providing them with value, you're not going to get anywhere. Sure, you got to figure out how to make money, or you can't stay in business. But Be very clear about your missions and your value and what it is you're trying to do. And those need to align with what the market wants, what the customers want, and you got to have a fantastic team. And if you have all of those, then you will build a great business. And then you just look at the market that you're in. You know, forestry is a market that we happen to love, both of us, and we've chosen this as our place. But whatever market it is, you can have a product, but you have to have people to buy it, and you got to figure that piece out. So it's but really for me, it's about understanding your vision, what you're trying to do. You know, we always said, help people figure out what's best. And because we're talking about forestry, make sure we put the tools in the hands of the people who have to manage the asset. You know, me telling you how to manage your forest makes no sense at all. Me giving you a tool that helps you make a great decision. So that was our passion, and I would stay totally focused on your passion rather than how do I make a gazillion bucks.
Right, for sure. And so thinking of certainly in academia, it became a pattern where you saw more like professors as spouses, husband, wife, partners, whatnot. And so thinking of your journey with Remsoft, with your husband, your partner, your business partner, your CTO, how did you make it work? Was there a secret thing where it's always I'm the boss, you go just listen to me, Angela. Any pro tips or suggestions for those entrepreneurs that are navigating that space where family is the business and
For
they're
sure.
in for
I would say it's not for everybody.
it?
About 42 years later, we're still married, we're still hanging out, so it's okay. But we did have to go through some stuff early on that it involved yelling, to be frank. We had to figure out each of our roles. And when we got to, if it's a business decision at the end of the day, I'm going to make the call. We can discuss it all you want, but I'm going to make the call. And if it's a technical decision, then he's going to make the call. And once we defined places and said, look, this is your call. I may not like it, but I'm going to support it just like you would anybody else. So that had to happen. And we got pretty good at not bringing work home, although there was always a busy time. I remember when the kids were growing up and it was just like, okay, guys, we'd call a family meeting and say, okay, just put your heads down. Next month is going to be a zoo. You're eating peanut butter sandwiches, and that's all you're going to get. There were times like that, but really the big piece that we had to figure out was understanding each person's role and value and deferring to them on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like if I was to have you go on the show, maybe he would have a different answer, but we'll see what
He'd
happens
say,
later
just
on.
listen to her.
Just listen to her. That's right. That's right. So as we look to wind down, maybe a couple like rapid fire questions there, just thinking, Remsoft closed its transaction Christmas Eve, I believe. What did you do? The moment ink was on paper. What like was it, you know, let's jump up and joy, or what did you do, one, and then two, how did you feel after that momentous event?
It's a good question because if it had been a different time, I think we would have planned a huge celebration and done, but it took a while. That last little bit took a lot out of us right at a time when we're trying to get ready for Christmas and family and all of that kind of stuff. And normally we would have been doing all of the prep work. So we got, and I'm grateful we got to the close, and it was really just, let's put that aside. And we literally didn't think about it much over Christmas. We just turned our focus to family and friends and enjoying Christmas, and so that we could come back in the new year ready to go. Honestly, we haven't had a big celebration yet because life has been busy, but we're planning that something for the summer, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, so sounds like for our listeners, it was peanut butter and jam sandwiches at the Fineke's table for Christmas
Peanut butter and
dinner
jam. Well,
there.
the kids are grown and gone, but I still, didn't get to hang out with my granddaughter very much. But yeah, no, it was very much peanut butter and jam sandwiches through December.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe the last question I'll ask for you is for our listeners that are hearing the story. I suspect most have heard the announcement of RemSoft securing a majority investment in the company, RemSoft acquiring Lim Geomatics, RemSoft planning on more or mergers and acquisitions in terms of the strategy and the thinking that you shared on this podcast. For those companies maybe that are listening, for the other players, our customers and whatnot, what would you tell them based on where we are right now? What pearls of wisdom would you share with our customers on the global forestry landscape?
I would say it's an exciting time. We're also living in some really uncertain times. And right now, that's just hard for everybody, not just sort of politically, which is, consuming all of the news right now, but climate change, environment, economic things are just really uncertain. And it's hard to see your way through that. So I would say give yourself a bit of a break and be gentle with yourself. But in terms of us and where we're going, we really have always worked with our clients to understand what they need, what they have, and where they need to be. And this is not a journey that RemSoft is doing on its own. We very much want to do it with our customers. We want to hear their thoughts. We want to understand their priorities. They're so many different companies. We need to listen to them all, but it's a journey we want to do together. We want to stay on track of having technology ready as much as possible just before you need it, not way out there where it's 10 years out, but we want to move as quickly as we can, but we want to move with our customers. And that's going to be a huge priority. Doug Jones, who many of you know, is 100% focused on customer success. He's going to live and breathe that. And that's going to be something that's our biggest focus.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, for those who you're shifting towards a strategic advisor role and a board member on the board of directors, for those listeners that may want to follow up or reach out with questions or even to get your expert views, what's the best way for folks to actually get a hold of you going forward?
Email's always best for me, and it's andrea@remsoft.com.
Perfect. There you go. Andrew@remsoft.com. Well, hey, Andrew, I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with me. This is something we've been waiting to do for a long time,
Yeah.
and I'm sure there'll be more stories that we'll be sharing to the world not in the not so too far future. But thanks so much for your time, and looking forward to chatting more over the coming days, weeks, and months.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin. It's great chatting as always.